KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Judge Torres, running January 10th to 19th at the Milagro Theater in Portland. Judge Torres is a modern-day fairy tale rooted in Salvadoran folklore. Xiomara Torres faces many obstacles in her turbulent journey crossing the border, maneuvering the U.S. foster care system, missing her family, aging out, and becoming the most recent Latinx judge in Multnomah County, Oregon. This is her story. Again, that's Judge Torres, running January 10th through 19th, weekly on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Don't leave me here to twist in the
KBOO proudly co-sponsors the Portland Folk Music Society Concert Series, kicking off 2019 with Americana Music Quartet True North. The show is January 18th, 7:30 p.m. at Reedwood Friends Church in Southeast Portland. True North is fronted by award-winning singer-songwriters Kristen Granger and Dan Wetzel, and rounded out with two well-known Northwest bluegrassers, Martin Stevens and Josh Adkins. Kristen Granger has won recent awards from Telluride, Merlefest, and Kerrville Songwriting Competitions. For more information about the Portland Folk Music Society Concert Series, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And you're listening to KBOO Portland Community Radio for all of Portland and beyond. And the food show is up next.
I made you a present you never expected.
Welcome to the Food Show. My name is Emily Becker.
And I'm Todd Caspi. Today we're talking about food labels on plant-based dairy and meat products. We'll speak with experts about what plant-based foods should be called and why the animal, meat, and dairy industries are pushing back against plant-based products. We'll also talk with national and local food producers about what they call their plant-based products.
Tal, you brought this issue to my attention a few months ago, and I was surprised to learn that it's an issue at all. You sent me a link to an article that said Tofurky, a company that makes plant-based meats, is suing the state of Missouri because of a new law in that state that says plant-based products can't use the word meat on their label. And then if they do put the word meat on the label, they can be fined $1,000 and up to 1 year in prison. People in Missouri must really feel threatened by soybeans and Satan. We started digging into the issue and learned it's not just in Missouri and it's not just meat.
That's right, Emily. There are also legal cases and possible legislation about how dairy products are labeled too. People are questioning whether non-dairy butter, plant-based cheeses, and nut milks can be called butter, cheese, or milk. The dairy industry claims that consumers are being duped because they don't know that almond milk does not come from a cow, or that packaging of plant-based dairy butter looks way too similar to butter made from cow milk.
There are a lot of cases that have been dismissed already, and there are more pending. Later, we'll hear from Miyoko Shinner about a class action lawsuit against her company, and from Elizabeth Derbis about the Tofurky lawsuit. Beyond the "Are consumers confused?" question, the Food and Drug Administration is also looking into the dairy issue. The FDA is in charge of food and nutrition labels and also standards of identity for food. The FDA is currently accepting comments on this issue, so stay tuned to learn how you can weigh in on dairy labels. Today, we'll look at the dairy side of the issue first, and then the latter half of the show, we'll talk about plant-based meat and clean meat.
We called up Michelle Simon, Executive Director of Plant-Based Food Association, to learn more about why this issue is getting so much attention right now. The Plant-Based Food Association's mission is to promote the plant-based food industry by removing obstacles to a fair and competitive marketplace for alternative to animal ingredients and products. Michelle is a public health lawyer and author of Appetite for Profit: How the Food Industry Undermines Our Health and How to Fight Back.
The Plant-Based Foods Association represents over 120 member companies, mostly that make alternatives to meat and dairy products, and our position is that this whole conversation around what to label the foods is really a solution in search of a problem. Consumers are not confused. Consumers have spoken. They've been buying almond milk and soy milk for some 30, 40 years now. Soy milk goes back thousands of years, even almond milk. This is nothing new. And yet the dairy industry has decided that they don't like our member companies using words like milk and cheese and yogurt, and so they're making a lot of noise about it. And unfortunately, the federal government has now decided to listen to them and take up the issue. So our position is there's no problem here. You know, the consumer is the one who decides in the marketplace, and, you know, our members are simply using words that consumers understand.
Why do you think people are making a big deal about this now?
Well, it's not actually now. It's been many years of the dairy industry attempting to stop companies from getting FDA to take action. They just haven't gotten anywhere until now, and I think what's really bringing it to a head is the fact that the plant-based foods industry is really becoming more and more popular. And so we're seeing, you know, mainstream retailers make more room on the shelf, particularly for milk alternatives. We're seeing just an explosion of variety of products on the shelf. But the other side of the coin, which really has nothing to do with the success and popularity of our members' foods, is that the dairy industry, unfortunately, is hurting more than ever, and there are many economic reasons for that. And so because there's no real easy fix to, say, you know, the average family farmer who may have to go out of business, they're really feeling the need to point fingers. And their lobbyists, unfortunately, have decided to point fingers at us, even though we have nothing to do with their particular situation.
But what's the FDA saying now?
Well, they haven't really said much of anything. I mean, for decades, they literally did nothing because they knew that this was not a problem. They have bigger priorities on their plates, you know, things like food safety and other issues that are just much more pressing than almond milk being called almond milk. But in recent, about 2 months ago, the FDA commissioner did announce that they were going to basically do a request for information. That's what they're calling it. So there is an open comment period right now. The FDA hasn't said they're going to take any action yet. They're simply asking for information about the plant-based dairy alternatives and, you know, what it looks like in the marketplace and what consumers understand. So that's where things stand right now, that we're simply providing FDA with as much information as we can based on their request, and then we'll find out from there where the agency is heading.
Are they asking for comments from consumers as well? And if so, how can people provide a comment?
Yes, I would encourage your listeners, if they have an opinion on the matter, particularly if they are a consumer of almond milk or a yogurt alternative, and have an opinion about seeing labels that, you know, retain that terminology, they too can go on the FDA website and put in a comment. Anyone can comment.
Excellent. So we know that there's a number of lawsuits right now or that have been settled in the last year or so. Has the Plant-Based Foods Association been a party of any of those lawsuits?
So let's be clear. No lawsuits have been settled. There have been a few lawsuits filed by unscrupulous plaintiffs' lawyers claiming that there have been, you know, consumer deception around phrases like soy milk and almond milk, and every single one of those cases have been thrown out, and the courts have laughed at the very idea that a consumer could be confused by something called almond milk. On the flip side, there is a lawsuit now pending in the state of Missouri based on a law that was passed last year in that state that would limit the way plant-based meat alternatives are labeled. And PBFA is a consulting expert on that lawsuit, and our our board member company, Tofurky, is the lead plaintiff in that lawsuit. And the basis is the First Amendment. So the First Amendment in this country protects not only political speech, but also advertising and what's called commercial speech, the ability of companies to, you know, say what they want to say on labels as long as it's not misleading and no one's getting hurt. And so because we think that any bill that would limit the ability of companies to use plain language on their labels violates the First Amendment, that's the basis of that particular lawsuit in Missouri.
Is there anything else you want to tell us about the Plant-Based Foods Association or the labeling issue?
Mm-hmm. Well, just that, you know, this is really an arena where consumers get the last word, right? We can fight all we want in the policy arena, and a dairy lobby can try and get their way and use their political muscle, but, you know, that won't change the marketplace, and the marketplace, and that's where the consumer has the last say. And so there's no turning back the clock. Consumers have already started shifting away from animal-based foods over to plant-based, and that shift is essential to happen from a health standpoint, certainly from an environmental standpoint. We know that plant-based foods are far more sustainable, at least than some of the most intensive factory farm animal practices that are the most commonly practiced in this country. So there's a major shift going on in consumers that want to eat more healthfully, care about the planet, care about animal welfare, care about labor, all of the practices that go into our current mostly unsustainable food system. That shift is happening, and that's a really good thing, and that's what we want to encourage. And so we're really about helping companies succeed in that marketplace to meet the growing consumer demand, and we think we need policymakers to step up and support this growing food industry sector that really is trying to make a better world.
That was Michelle Simon from the Good Food Institute, and you're listening to The Food Show on KBOO. Michelle touched on how these labeling issues are impacting plant-based producers of both dairy and meat alternative products. Yesterday, we talked to Miyoko Shinner of Miyoko's Kitchen to learn more about her choice to label her vegan products cheese and butter.
We started by asking Miyoko to talk about her extensive background as a vegan chef and author.
You know, I've actually been in the industry for many, many years. When I went vegan in the 80s, I started my first food company, and I've been a serial entrepreneur ever since, you know, launching different food companies and restaurants, bakeries, writing cookbooks, doing a show on PBS, that sort of thing.
Can you tell us more about those first restaurants or how you started getting into making vegan cheese?
I had a restaurant in San Francisco back in the 90s called Now and Zen, and cheese was my downfall before when I first became vegan, and I was a cheating vegan occasionally, so I had to figure out how to make my favorite food. And so at the restaurant, you know, we served some cheesy dishes. They were sort of early iterations of this, you know, what I'm doing right now. But over the course of many, many years, I played around with various substrates and different technologies, and eventually started to read books and watch videos and take classes on dairy cheese making. And I started borrowing from those techniques and applying them to plant-based substrates. And that culminated in the writing of a book called Artisan Vegan Cheese that was published in 2012 and quickly became kind of a cult classic.
And can you tell us a little bit about Miyoko's Kitchen, your company now?
Started that in 2014 because so many people kept saying, oh my God, your book is so incredible, but it's such a drag to make your cheeses. It just takes days. Can't you just start a cheese company and I'll buy them? So actually, you know, you're up in Portland. I want to just let you know that one of my greatest inspirations was Seth Tibbett, founder of Tofurky. And, you know, I've had, as I mentioned, I've been a serial entrepreneur. I've had many, many businesses, but they didn't all go well. And so I didn't have a lot of confidence in my ability to start another business. I ran into Seth, who was actually a former competitor of another company I had. I had a product called the Unturkey, and he had the Tofurky. This was back in the 90s. And I ran into Seth. I gave him some of my cheeses, and he said, you know, you really ought to start a company, and if you do, I'll be your first investor.
Wow, that's cool.
With words of encouragement, I was able to start Miyoko's, and Seth is one of our investors.
At what point did the labeling become an issue?
It was always an issue. In the very, very beginning, I knew that you couldn't use the word cheese because of the standards of identity, which define what you can call various dairy products.
And those are determined by the Food and Drug Administration, right?
It's the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, has the standards of identity. They do for many, many different kinds of food. The idea of the standards of identity is to prevent confusion in the marketplace. So milk, anything made from milk is defined as the lacteal secretions of one or more healthy cows free of colostrum and la-di-da-di-da. Obviously, we're not using cows in making our products, and so we knew we couldn't call it cheese. And when the California equivalent of the FDA, the CDFA, came into my plant or my little facility in the very beginning and asked me what the product was, I said, well, it's vegan cheese. And they said, well, you can't call it cheese. What are you going to call it? And just out of the, I blurted out, it's a cultured nut product. And so in the from the very, very beginning, on our packaging, it said cultured nut product. Nowhere did you find the words cheese or butter on our packaging, on our website, on our social media. We just avoided the term because we were afraid we were going to get in trouble. Over the years, we became emboldened, and I saw that cultured nut product was actually causing more confusion in the nut, in the marketplace, because consumers don't go into a store and say, oh, where's the cultured nut product?
You know, or the cultured dairy product.
I'm sorry?
Or the cultured dairy product or the cultured cow product, or, you know, it's just not a common term.
They just don't. I mean, what, you know, what the heck is that? It just made no sense. So, and if we were trying to market it and reach consumers, if they didn't know that it was the equivalent of something made from dairy, they weren't going to buy it. And so it presented actually some marketing challenges for us, and we felt it was actually creating confusion in the marketplace, not preventing. So as the company grew, so did our courage, and we just decided, you know what? This is butter. This is cheese, and we're just going to call it that. We're just going to add the modifiers that make it clear to the consumer that it's not made from cow's milk, but it's made from plants.
And that eventually led to a lawsuit?
Eventually led to a lawsuit, yes, for the use of the term European-style cultured vegan butter.
And where are you at with that lawsuit?
To be perfectly honest, not very far. We haven't been served yet.
Oh.
Yeah, we're hoping that it's going to get dismissed. I think that it's very promising considering, you know, what happened with, there was an almond milk lawsuit recently that sort of got, you know, the judge said, look, there's no confusion in the marketplace. That's ridiculous. And I think that's kind of the, I know Missouri is different. You know, there's been some, the bill passed about not being able to call your products meat. These are legislators, and I think consumers and judges know the difference, you know, whether or not you're getting paid by the industry to pass laws or whether you're a consumer that's more educated. You know, I think it's pretty clear that the majority of people are not confused. If you go to the FDA website and read the comments that talk about these issues, most consumers are, you know, they're like, hey, we know what almond milk is. We're not confused. We know almond milk doesn't come from a cow. You know, I think you know what they say, first they laugh at you. No, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, and then they attack you, and then you win. And I think we're at that point, you know, first we were ignored as an industry, then they laughed at us, and now they're attacking us. And what's the next step? We're going to win.
Can you tell us more about who are behind these lawsuits?
It's kind of hard to say. Sometimes it's the industry, you know, it could, sometimes it's supposedly an individual. Sometimes it's just an opportunistic lawyer that will find a plaintiff to sue a company in order to take advantage of trends in the marketplace. But it doesn't matter. You know, whatever it is, it brings that attention to the public's mind and creates an opportunity for discussion. The reality is the trajectory of food's going to change. It's inevitable. Consumers demand it. Industry can help lead that revolution, and you know these products are going to become more and more prevalent over time. It's just unavoidable. They're not going to shut down because some legislators said you can't call it meat or you can't call it milk. You know, consumers are going to call it whatever they want to call it, and language evolves, and language will evolve to include products made from plants as either dairy or meat.
So it seems like this issue is coming up over and over just in the past couple years. Do you think that's because the plant-based dairy and meat industry is growing so significantly, or do you think that the, you know,
why
Dairy Council is threatened
irrelevant
in some way?
I mean, you know, 20 years ago we were irrelevant, and that was where they ignored you. You know, they were like, they just thought we were a joke. I mean, and you know, obviously we sort of were. The products weren't good. They had no traction in the marketplace. It was sort of a joke. But today, it's a serious thing. Consumers are gravitating towards plant-based products. And so the industry, the incumbent industry, is threatened.
So tell us what's going on with the Food and Drug Administration right now. Like, why are they involved? Why are they seeking comments? Can you just tell us more about that?
Well, they're thinking about ruling on this matter because they've gotten such pressure from legislators and lobbyists. So there is a commenting period that goes until the 27th of this month. You know, who knows with a government shutdown whether that'll be extended or what's going to happen or if the FDA will even have the manpower to do anything.
What are they seeking comments on?
The comments about whether or not a plant-based company should be able to call their products milk, cheese, etc. So it's pertinent to the dairy, so-called dairy alternatives. And that's what the FDA is asking. The FDA is considering ruling on this, and they're asking they're trying to get public comments to see where the public stands as it pertains to nomenclature.
How can people submit comments?
They can go to their FDA website. So Miyoko's has a website that we've created. It's called plantdairyrevolution.com. There is a link directly to where you can leave a comment for the FDA about this very topic.
Can you tell us where you see the plant-based industry in the next 10 years?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I really do believe it's going to change to a point where we're going to think of dairy products not as coming just from animals, but from plants as well. And so I think what's going to happen is that you're going to go to the marketplace, you're going to go to the store, and half the milk case will be plants and half of it will be animals. And same thing with meat and cheese and everything else. There's going to be a much, much wider acceptance of all of these products. We're really at that tipping point when consumer acceptance is just going to, this is going to become mainstream. We're not going to be the alternative anymore. It's sort of like California, where minorities are no longer they're the majority now. And so at what point do you stop calling them minorities? And that's the same thing with our products, which is why I don't call our products a cheese alternative. I just call them plant cheese or plant dairy, because they're no longer, at some point, they're not going to be the alternative. They're going to be mainstream.
In looking at plantdairyrevolution.com, it sounds like you are proposing that the FDA split dairy into two categories, animal dairy and plant dairy. Is that a proposal that's gaining traction?
Well, we're using it for marketing. So, you know, this is our company initiative. It's not what the PBFA is doing, but it's somewhat similar. So we really do believe that this is how we have to start thinking about it. But, you know, as I mentioned, the word dairy is going to evolve over time into a new meaning, meaning. And we're going to have to shift as a world, as an entire human population, because the environment demands it, our human health demands it, and the welfare of billions of animals, both domestic and wild, demand it.
That was Miyoko Shinner from Miyoko's Kitchen. We talked to her yesterday about her company. And now we've got Heidi Lovig on the phone, a local cheesemaker.
Hi.
Hi, Heidi. Thanks for calling in today.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to be on.
Awesome. First of all, let's start off with you telling us about your background and Heidi Ho Veganics.
So it's Heidi Ho Organics, and I am a vegan chef. I became a chef in 2008-2009, and did a lot of work in Portland, 2010 and 2011, writing vegan options onto menus, as there was a lot more people and a lot more restaurant owners looking to add vegan options and wanted things beyond, you know, tofu stir fries. And so I had some training at Departure. I had done quite a bit of traveling internationally. And I found myself writing a lot of options and just excluding cheese. And because what was on the market, I found to be impalatable and rubbery and made from, a whole bunch of ingredients that I couldn't pronounce that were starch and fat emulsifications of some kind. But while they were stretchy and sort of acted like cheese, they didn't taste like cheese. And so I was inspired to start playing with real food. And, you know, we're so lucky in Portland to be surrounded by such incredible farmers doing such incredible work in the fields that our access to ingredients is incredible. And I just started playing, really. That's how I got started. I experiment after experiment, trying to make some alternative that was like cheese, that could act like cheese, but also tasted good, because that's why people eat cheese. It tastes good.
Great. So we're talking today about how plant-based cheese and meat and dairy makers label their products and the issues surrounding that. And I believe that you call your products delicious plant-based cheese with a Z. Is that right?
Yeah, we use a Z. And in 2012, when I started Heidi Ho and we went to go get our licensing in order, the FDA said you can't use the word cheese. And they held up my licensing for about 4 months.
Wow.
And finally, I submitted paperwork to ask if I could just change the spelling so that that would clearly identify to the consumer that there was something different about the product. And I got approved. So we just went ahead with using cheese, plant-based cheese with a Z.
So why did you choose to use that word cheese? Were you worried that your consumers would be confused or not know what to do with it if you didn't call it cheese?
Yeah, I wanted them to know that that's what it was for, to use as an alternative to dairy cheese, to use this as plant cheese. I think, cheese is just understood. If you want cheese for a sandwich or if you want to make pizza or if you want, like, it goes in burritos, it goes on nachos, you can make grilled cheese. Like, that's cheese is an understood word.
Right. And
for its application, you know?
Yeah.
For sure. And right now you're at the Fancy Food Show in San Francisco, correct?
Yeah, down in San Francisco at the Fancy Food Show.
Great. And you're there with a lot of other plant-based dairy and meat producers. I'm wondering if labeling is an issue that has come up. Is it a conversation that's taking place at the show?
It is. It's been a topic of conversation. It's interesting. It's a lot of there's companies that choose to use the word vegan. There's companies that use plant-based. There's plant-powered. There's plant-strong. There's a lot of companies coming up that are mixed, mixed meats. And whether that's that they're replacing, 40% with mushroom and the other 60% is meat. There's which is all called blended. So there's a blended category coming up, and it's all with the intention to reduce the impact on the environment, to reduce our reliance on animal agriculture, and to reduce, our impact really on health, planet. I mean, this movement is huge. So, yes, it's a topic of conversation. Labeling less is a topic of conversation, but just this market is growing so rapidly, and it is better for the people, better for the planet, and definitely better for animals, both the ones that are eaten and the ones that are out and about.
Yeah, absolutely. So you just mentioned that the FDA actually held up your licensing because of that term cheese. So that must have been worrisome to say the least. And we talked with Miyoko Shenner earlier and heard from her that the Food and Drug Administration is currently seeking products on the labeling of dairy products. Like, why do you think the FDA is now looking into this, and why do you think, or what do you think they should be doing?
You know, it was, I'm going to go back to the first part of that question. Yes, I was like, why is the FDA concerned about my little tiny company that's selling at the Portland State, you know, farmers market? I mean, like, I kind of, in my mind, I was thinking, okay, either I'm really onto something that's going to grow into a giant market, so they're ahead of it. But it was very much like, what's the big deal? I have like $12,000 in sales here locally. We're not talking about a lot of money or a big industry
yet. You're a big threat to the dairy industry.
Right. So obviously now they're paying attention because big dairy sales are declining. I mean, it just is. It's true. And still in the government, dairy is what's getting big subsidies. There's a lot of big subsidies going out for, there's warehouses full of dairy that's not selling. And so that's where the subsidies are going. And so now they're paying attention because the plant-based dairy industry is exploding. What do I think they should do? I don't know. I'm a chef, so that's a tough question for me. But I don't think that we're confusing customers by calling it cheese. You know, most people read their labels now and look at what the ingredients are. And I think by calling it plant-based cheese, there's no confusion. By calling it almond milk, you haven't confused anyone. By calling it flax milk, you haven't confused anyone. So it's really just talking about its application, right? It's not saying what it's from. So I know Miyoko has done some work around, trying to educate some the general population around that there's really now going to be two categories. There's animal dairy and there's plant dairy. And I think she's spot on. Really, the grocery stores are already starting to integrate what was a segregated section of food that was, in produce and was kind of all of the fake foods. And now it's spread out through the entire grocery store. And I think that's just going to continue to grow. Now you can get the Impossible Burgers or the Beyond Sausages in the meat section. So I think we're just going to see more and more and more of that.
Do you fear that the FDA will actually get in the way of this growth?
Well, they always get in the way, but we always figure out a way to go around it, right? I mean, I believe that this industry, the plant-based food industry, is strong enough and big enough now that the answer to that is no. I don't think so. I don't actually think it's possible to stop us. Maybe they waited too long. Maybe I'm just hopeful. Maybe I'm just a dreamer. But I don't see the knowledge across the country and really across the globe about these products is what it is. So if you spell milk, M-Y-L-K, the consumer understands that it's an alternative milk, you know, and you see that brand in the UK. So I think, I don't think there's a way to stop us. Maybe there is, but we're pretty smart.
So, I mean, just to kind of summarize what it sounds like, what both you and Miyoko are saying is that, you know, milk is the like category of product, and then you could have cow milk or you could have almond milk or you could have soy milk, and like butter is like the how you use it, you spread it on things or you cook with it, and you can have plant-based butter, you could have dairy-based butter. So is that kind of like that split between like animal-based dairy and plant-based dairy, is that where you see grocery store shelves going and where the future lies?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you started to see plant-based companies, you know, using cow patterns on their packaging, that would be confusing. But much like you never saw, goat milks putting cows on there, like, we're pretty clear to our consumers about what we are. And as this market continues to explode, direct, clear communication to our customers is also benefits us. It doesn't just benefit the customers. And the FDA coming out of nowhere, concerned about confused customers, I mean, clearly this is about money. It's about market share, and it's about the fact that big dairy is declining. And thankfully it is. because it's not good for people and it's not good for the planet, and it's definitely not good for the cows.
That's a perfect note to end on, Heidi. Thank you so much for being on The Food Show. Where can consumers buy your products in Portland?
Right now, actually, we're doing a partnership with Salt and Straw. So I'm going to say everybody go to Salt and Straw and get their lemon cheesecake. It's called Heidi Ho Lemon Cheesecake Ice Cream. That's where it's being featured this month. So go grab an ice cream cone for January.
Awesome. Thanks, Heidi. Have fun in San Francisco.
Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I stumble home, always alone. Will it ever be different? I turn the dial, it's all worthwhile. You're my reason for living. These endless stories, they pass me by.
You're listening to The Food Show on KBOO FM. We're talking today about plant-based products and what we put on the labels. We've talked to some dairy producers, plant dairy producers already, and now we're going to turn to the plant-based meat side of things. So to start, we called up Elizabeth Derbis of the Good Food Institute. Elizabeth is a lawyer who works on global and domestic regulatory issues affecting clean meat and plant-based food. Good Food Institute is focused on clean meat, a new term to me. We'll learn more about that in a minute, and plant-based alternatives to animal products.
The Good Food Institute, or GFI, we're a nonprofit. We help create and support companies that produce plant-based and cell-cultured meats, including through advocacy. So we work with scientists. We have a science and technology team. We work with new companies. We work with investors. We're sort of all over the map in trying to help promote plant-based and cell-cultured foods.
Can you tell us more about clean meat? I feel like a lot of our listeners actually don't know what clean meat means.
Sure. So clean meat is sometimes called cultured meat or cellular meat. It's the idea is that you take a biopsy from an animal. The animal goes off and lives its life. You take your biopsy with animal cells, and you grow and proliferate those cells independently of the animal to end with a piece of real meat that is edible. And there are a number of companies working on this. A few years ago, there were four or five. Now there's more like 25 worldwide. And obviously, the product is not on shelves yet, but companies are targeting having a product to sell in the next few years. They're working on getting it up to scale now. They can make it, but they can't make it at scale today.
So there's no commercially available clean meat yet?
That's right. People have tasted it. It was 2013. Mark Post in the Netherlands created the first clean meat burger and unveiled it, and it was eaten at a press conference. So it can be done. It has been done. It's being done. It just isn't being done yet at an industrial scale.
Why is it being done? Like, why is this a better kind of meat?
So there are a number of problems with conventional meat production today. It's bad for the environment. It's a major factor in climate change. There's foodborne illness resulting from fecal contamination in slaughterhouses, in particular antibiotic resistance. Such a large proportion of the antibiotics that are prescribed in this country are fed to livestock prophylactically. And this contributes to the growth of antibiotic resistance, which is going to be, it's projected to be a big problem in coming years. There's also the question of the efficiency of growing meat this way, because you have to produce so many plants to feed them through animals to get, say, one steak. You know, there's a question about how we're going to feed the growing population of the world if we keep using our land and water resources this way, be a lot more efficient to be eating more plant-based foods.
And is clean meat a more energy and water efficient way to do things? Has that been shown to be true yet, or is it yet to be seen?
It's not conclusive yet because they're not producing at scale, so it's hard to really get data to show exactly what the outputs are going to be. It's very clear that it's going to be more efficient in terms of land use. They're going to need to collect data as the processes get developed a little bit further. There are several studies right now, but the studies all rely on sort of faulty assumptions about how it's going to be produced at scale.
And does the meat industry see this as competition?
Absolutely, absolutely. At least if the resources they're devoting to fighting it are any indication, then yeah, they seem quite concerned.
Tell us a little bit more about what's going on in Missouri specifically with the new laws they've enacted.
Sure. So Missouri passed a law last year that was effective in August, although they said they weren't going to start enforcing it until January of this year. The law criminalizes truthful speech by prohibiting the use of meat terminology on plant-based or cell-cultured products, even if the product is prominently labeled in a way that clearly identifies its origin. It provides for penalties of incarceration up to 1 year and a fine of up to $1,000. And the intent of the law is clearly to prohibit these meat companies, plant-based and cell-cultured meat companies, from using meat terminology in their labels in a way that would communicate clearly to consumers what the product is intended to do.
Who's behind this movement to stop the growth of this new industry?
So in Missouri, it seems pretty clear that the cattlemen were lobbying for it. The sponsors of the law publicly acknowledged that they were out to protect Missouri cattlemen, and there's talk about consumer confusion, but the Missouri doesn't have any evidence that there's any confusion on the part of consumers. You know, no one is accidentally buying plant-based meats thinking that the product is meat from a slaughtered animal. So it seems pretty clearly protectionist. They're trying to put their thumb on the scale to protect the traditional meat industry. And we think this is unconstitutional, so we have filed a lawsuit to challenge that.
And what's the basis of the lawsuit?
It's that the plant-based and clean meat producers have a First Amendment right to label their products in a way that is not misleading, that conveys to the consumer, consistent with consumer expectations, conveys to the consumer what the product is, describe the product in terms consumers can understand.
Is that a free speech issue or,
Yep.
It is, yeah.
Effectively censorship to prohibit companies from being able to use language that consumers understand to describe the product.
Probably the way that this whole issue came to my attention was Tal read something about tofurkey and this lawsuit. So I know that the Good Food Institute and Tofurkey, who's based here in Oregon, are both the plaintiffs. Is there anyone else involved in the lawsuit?
So we are the two plaintiffs, as you said. And then the Good Food Institute is also co-counsel with the Animal Legal Defense Fund and the ACLU of Missouri.
Can you tell us about where the lawsuit is at right now?
So we have filed a motion for a preliminary injunction, and just no action has been taken on that yet. The defendants are the prosecutors of Missouri. They have filed an answer, but they are not really defending the constitutionality of the statute. In the meantime, the state has filed a motion to intervene, which we are not opposing, and the state has replied, and they are seeking to defend the constitutionality of the statute, but our motion for preliminary injunction has not been ruled on yet.
Do you think that other states will pass similar laws?
Well, we hope not, but they are trying to. As of now, I'm aware of 8 states that have just recently come up with bills that use either have similar language or clearly similar intent to the Missouri statute.
So it sounds like the battle has just begun.
That's right.
What can the public do about stopping these new laws?
I think in states where bills like this are pending or being proposed, you can communicate with your legislators and tell them that, you know, you're not confused about what a label that says meatless meatballs really means. You know, we think that these statutes, you know, were they passed, they're all going to contribute to consumer confusion. They're not going to reduce it because there isn't any confusion about what these products are now. And, you know, tell your legislators that.
Great. How can people learn more about the Good Food Institute?
You can go to our website, www.gfi.org. We have a lot of material on there about plant-based alternatives and cell-cultured alternatives to animal products. You can learn all about the science behind clean meat. You can learn about the Missouri litigation. We've got a lot of resources for anyone who's interested.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for being on The Food Show.
My pleasure.
All right. We want to welcome Cyrus to the studio. Thank you for joining us at KBOO today. Cyrus is a good friend of mine and restaurant owner. He owns Achiza Kitchen and also a plant-based meat company, Achiza Eats. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Tell us about your restaurant. Let's start there.
Well, Achiza Kitchen is a vegan tea house and restaurant located in Southwest Portland, Oregon. We opened about a year ago, and it has been a spectacular journey ever since we opened our doors. It's just been full, and lots of I would say, great experiences along the way. I opened it with my partner about a year and a half ago, and it's been quite the experience for sure.
I have to say that it is definitely my favorite restaurant in Portland by far.
I got to go for my birthday. It was really good.
It was amazing.
Can you, just for people who aren't in the know yet, can you tell us like what kind of cuisine it is, what sorts of foods you make?
Yeah, Achiza Kitchen is, I would say we focus on a couple of different things, mainly the oolong teas that really pair well with dim sum. We have vegan dim sum that we offer, and also other small plates from different Asian ethnicities and cuisines from around the world. And we also offer like big bowls that usually change every season depending on, you know, what ingredients are available, especially locally.
Why did you pick that cuisine?
Vegan Pan-Asian cuisine is really like been my focus for years and years, especially in other avenues of my life, trying to replicate foods that I had grown up with. Being an Asian American, mixed race Pacific Islander, I've been really exposed to a lot of different cuisines from Southeast Asia and Pacific cuisine. And it really became my focus on trying to get a really meat-centric focused food to have its vegan modality.
And at the restaurant, you use a lot of fake meat, correct?
Yeah, our veggie meats are featured at my restaurant. I felt like it was really important that we had the textures and flavors that were very reminiscent of a lot of these dishes, to using the best ingredients possible to kind of convey those textures and flavors.
Right, and now you have started packaging those fake meats and offering them to the public, correct?
Yeah.
Tell us about the journey to that.
Achiza Eats. I had called it Achiza Soul Food, and I used to do recipe development with my auntie Leona, who is Taiwanese. She does a lot of the fake meat importing. These fake meats are handcrafted in Taiwan, and they're really like under a very strict vegan process in a lot of these manufacturing companies and essentially families that run these beautiful fake meats out into the world. And so from like getting to do recipe development with her in the Bay Area, utilizing a lot of her products and kind of figuring out where they could be utilized to their best ability in like a lot of our cuisine, or even in a lot of like Western cuisine. That really inspired me. I knew that my future was going to be getting it out into the world and distributing it. And when I had moved to Portland, it was really kind of like my focus of, all right, well, let's figure out how to do this in either a restaurant capacity or distribution. And I decided to do both.
Rad. Real quick, can you tell us where your product is available?
Right now, it's exclusively available at Food Fight as far as a grocer. So definitely check us out. We have our products there. We also sell our products online for in-store pickup with limited shipping. I really can't stress right now how small of a company we are and how family-based we are in and ourselves, a queer family. Let me just stress that very much so. And, you know, I just really wanted to keep it small scale at the moment, but available to those that are really passionate about our fake meats. Because once you try it, it's like, oh my goodness.
They are really delicious. So when you were setting up this company in a Cheesy Eats, and you had to make decisions about how to label your products, and you've been in the studio all morning, so you know that that's what our episode's about today. So how did you decide to call your products what you call them?
I kept the consumer in mind as far as like what would be the easiest for them to relate to these products. And really, because the imitation meats that we create are so very close to their animal-based counterparts, that I also wanted to make sure that it was clearly labeled that it was vegan. So like if you look, a really great example that kind of throws people off is our vegan pork belly that has like, you know, a quarter inch of like fatty jelly, like, part on the very top of a really delicious, like meaty textured, like slice of fake meat. And, it looks like pork belly, and people, especially vegans, like for a very long time are very turned off sometimes by our fake meats because of how realistic sometimes it can get. But for me, it was like, wanting to make sure to convey vegan pork belly, and it's the largest font on my label, and there's like a punk rock pig on there, and like that's kind of like sassy, and I kind of want like the characters and like the visuals to kind of convey that there's like autonomy with the animals. On the back of my label, there's the cartoon animals that I have holding picket signs that says "Save our homies," and I feel like every piece of real estate on my label is going to be utilized to like kind of show that this is very much like conveying the idea that veggie meat saves lives. That's on one side of my label. And, you know, "Save our homies" on the back side of our label, and a really autonomous animal on the front showing that like you no longer have to use my brethren.
Right. But when you were deciding on the labeling, the issue of calling it meat, is that something you thought about?
I definitely did. I mean, what we're discussing today was definitely in the forefront of my process. I knew it was coming. I mean, like, being vegan and I've been vegetarian since I was 15. I've been on and off vegan and vegan now for about 5 years. And, like, for me, I've always watched these companies come about, including my own now, like, come about and either like struggle real hard, or you see online, or you can like, you see the news articles of the posturing from the meat and dairy industry, and the lobbying that happens, you know, just because these laws pass, that's when people are starting to wake up and they're like, oh my gosh. But, you know, as a vegan, I've been watching this closely for a very long time, like all the lobbying from the meat and dairy industry, all the disinformation about soy. You know, it's big business because they know that it's like their place in the shelves, if you will, are really numbered, you know.
Does the fear of being part of one of these lawsuits, does that loom on you? Is that something you think about?
Man, especially if I wanted to expand to any like vegan grocery store or natural grocery store in Missouri, absolutely. And that is on this my 5-year plan. You know, like I really want to be able to expand in certain ways to small co-ops and natural grocery stores, like in a certain way, because I think vegans deserve, like, you know, high quality products. And for me, I do have community in Kansas City, Missouri, you know, and there is a health food store there. There are budding vegan restaurants. And I would love my products to be there. I don't know anybody in Nebraska, but it's also like the beef state. So I don't know if there is that much of a vegan community there. But, you know, shout out to the
Omaha's
vegan
Nebraskans. Pretty cool.
Woo! Yeah, I feel like veganism is growing everywhere. If you were going to expand, or you could expand tomorrow into Missouri, would you?
I would probably. I mean, if I had the switch to be able to expand, period, yes, of course I would want to be in everywhere doing everything if I had the ability to expand my community's economy in that way. I feel like veganism is on the rise, and why not just kind of be at the forefront of it, even though this has been going on for a long time and the plant-based products have been, you know, kind of like a part of our community and our everything for a long time. I feel like it is important. We're still in the very beginnings of this.
So if you're ready to fight them if you have to.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, I don't have the money for lawyers at the moment, but right. You know.
And just, I mean, hypothetically, if you were to expand into Missouri, like if so, you know, one scenario, you make a whole different label, right? You make a whole different package for that state. You know, what would be the implications of that? Or like, what would $1,000 fine and a possible 1-year jail sentence mean to you if you don't change that label?
Well, I mean, because a lot of my business involvements kind of involve me literally physically being there. The 1 year away from everything like that would definitely be devastating to everything as it is. Yeah. Like, now it would be probably be very devastating to my partner having to pick up the slack. But I think it's absolutely ridiculous if you have like $1,000 fine, which is just probably something for their books, and then the 1 year you're disabling. I feel like that is completely such a how would I say, like a disproportionate you know, consequence for something that they're making such a big deal out of. I mean, does that mean that I might, like, Filipino family in the Philippines somehow when they come here they can't say coconut meat, or if they wanted to visit Kansas City, like, what is the definition of meat? Are they changing the definitions of these words that are in the textbook? Like, you know, like that's kind of like the policing of language to me that feels like really weird. But if they did want me to, or if I had the ability to expand tomorrow, sure, I would probably change the label, though that it's very expensive for just like a small market.
Yeah.
Or maybe it will be a big market and it's worth it. But vegans are worth it to have to like go around and figure out a way to get them these products that, especially for Asian Americans, like I feel like, you know, we miss a lot of these kinds of things.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Cyrus, so much for being on the show. I can't wait to eat at Cheesa Kitchen again. And
yeah, me too.
It's so good. You know, I think you make some really excellent points about the impacts of these laws and just that consumers, you know, they're not dumb. Like, we know what things are, and it's so helpful to see something labeled like chicken, and then I know I'm supposed to use it like chicken.
Yeah, exactly.
Just, yeah. Well, Cyrus, I wish we could talk forever, but our show is almost over. So thank you so much for being on the food show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming in, Cyrus. We'll go roller skating later tonight.
Yeah.
All right. So next up is a new segment we're starting up. I'm going to call it What's Going On Around Town. It's going to be a little short this week, but let's get it started. If you want to learn how to make whiskey, Freelance Spirits is hosting a whiskey distilling and blending workshop with master distiller Molly Troop. That takes place Sunday, January 20th from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. And Blockhouse is hosting a farm-to-table dinner. Chef Sam Northcutt of Redville Catering is partnering with Stoneboat Farms to create a four-course meal prepared and explained in front of you. That will take place on January 19th. From 5 till 8 p.m. And last up, Margaret Mueller, a friend of mine, creator of Mar Galaxy Superfood Snacks and co-creator of Best Friends Juice and Espresso Cart, will be hosting a Vegan Through the Seasons Winter Edition. This is a cooking class
It's a fun cooking class that will take place at the People's Co-op Sunday, January 26th from 5 to 7 p.m.
Thanks, Tal. If you have an event that's coming up that has anything to do about food or eating, feel free to email us at foodshow@kboo.fm. And that's our show for today. If you missed any of it or you want to listen back, you can find the episode archived on the KBOO website at kboo.fm. We want to thank our guests, Michelle Simon, Miyoko Shinner, Heidi Lovig, Elizabeth Derbis, and Cyrus Achiza for being on today's show. And thanks to Heather, our engineer. Stay with KBOO this afternoon for Jazz Lives.
And when you unravel the secret, we'll travel.
The World Arts Foundation and KBOO would like to invite you to the 34th anniversary and tribute to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., entitled We've Come This Far. Keep alive the dreams. On Monday, January 21st, 2019, from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center, 7600 Northeast Gleason Street. There'll be a host of civic leaders, choirs, the Jefferson Dancers, and of course, our own Victory Village Marketplace. Again, keep alive the dream. Monday, January 21st, from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center, 7600 Northeast Gleason, presented by the World Arts Foundation and broadcast live by KBOO Community Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Northwest Film Center's Real Music Festival from January 18th through February 16th. At the Witzel Auditorium in Portland. Films showing this year include Mr. Soul, The Ballad of Shirley Collins, Solo, The Evolution of the One Man Band, Gospel According to Al Green, and many more. Again, that's the Northwest Film Center's Real Music Festival from January 18th through February 16th at the Witzel Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage, under Community Events.
And you are listening to Community Radio, KBOO Portland, and K220.